Okay, good morning. My name is Carrie Post. I want to thank you all so much for joining our weekly tourism industry Zoom meeting. I want to thank you all again for being with us. Great to see so many smiling faces. So just one bit of housekeeping. Please, microphone, it is on the lower left. With so many people on the call, it's really important for everyone to do this so everyone can hear. So again, please mute your microphone in the lower left, and then please unmute it when you wish to speak. So again, thank you so much for making time to be with us today. As we know, because as certainly as an industry and as a community, we are in this together. And we are seeing some shocking COVID-19 numbers spiking dramatically in our community, around the state, and around the country. So we are indeed on very shaky ground right now, folks, in this phase two of the reopening. At a national level, as we know, there's a triple digit surge, and the reopening rollbacks are happening throughout the country, and certainly here in Florida and our own community, as bars and nightclubs were recently closed again. Certainly all restaurants, small businesses, small shops, retail nonprofits are all really suffering right now. So I ask you to, you know, do what you can do to shop local, do restaurant takeout and curbside where you can, and do what you can to support our local businesses. And please make a point to also make sure that you are including Black and minority-owned businesses as well. Again, we are all in this together. As we are seeing COVID-19 cases pouring, I find it really interesting that Disney World theme parks and Universal theme parks are opening this weekend. I think Universal's open now, and Walt Disney World parks are opening this weekend. Granted, they say with limited capacity, and they're going to be doing temperature checks and social distancing, so we're just going to have to see how that works out, and I'm interested to hear this weekend how it goes, but I think it's so interesting that ironically, you know, Florida is now an epicenter. And here just a few months ago, the tri-state area of, you know, New York and New Jersey and Connecticut, that, you know, they were coming to Florida and then requiring folks from those areas to quarantine. Now people from Florida traveling to the tri-state area now are required to quarantine. So it is strange times we are living in. Again, as Dr. Fauci, the good Anthony Fauci has said, is he's very concerned that so many states don't have the COVID-19 really under control. And so as you all have certainly heard that new cases now are typically younger, middle-aged adults, 21 to 44. The problem is, though, they're asymptomatic and they're infecting others is the major problem. They don't even know that they're sick. So nationally, hospitals are seeing a huge influx. Over 50 Florida hospitals as of yesterday, their IC units are already at capacity, and testing centers around the state and even in our own community are overwhelmed. So, you know, at one point, you know, people thought that COVID was going to disappear and it's warm, and clearly that is not the case. So we've got to try to get a lid on this as soon as possible. Next week could be the highest number of cases in the U.S. to date. And this past July 4th weekend was certainly another big test, just similar to Memorial Day. I mean, we know people have got, you know, pent-up demand to travel. We know people want to travel. They just have to be extra, extra careful and safe. So after the July 4th weekend, we got to wonder, are we going to see more cases skyrocket over the next 2 weeks? So we all must be safe, wear a mask, keep our distance, and make sure we are guarding against any risky behavior. And please be sure to thank a healthcare worker. And again, these are the folks on the front line. We really need to be, you know, showing our gratitude and appreciation for their service. So in Florida now, there are more than 213,000 cases. That is an increase of over 60,000 COVID cases in 1 week. A week ago when I shared a number, there's now 60,000 cases in 1 week in Florida. And in our own community, we now have a total of over 1,900 cases here locally. That is almost double from the number that I shared last week. And again, it's the asymptomatic that are being reported that they're responsible for all the new cases of COVID. So again, you could be, you know, be with somebody and not, they don't even know they're sick. So again, got to be very, very careful. As you all know, here locally, in response to all the COVID cases increasing, masks are now required in businesses in Leon County, both for staff and for customers. So this week, just started yesterday, just opened up, free face cloth, you know, cloth face coverings are being offered by the Office of Economic Vitality. So you can receive for your business, for your staff and any patrons, up to 100 masks for free. And you can pick them up at the OEV office. They're located at 315 South Calhoun Street. That's downtown behind the courthouse. And they're on the first floor, 9 to 5 daily. They just started yesterday. All you've got to do is go in. So, you know, you own or manage a business, and they will give you up to 100 masks. So I really encourage everybody to please take advantage of that opportunity. So you do have ample free masks for your staff and for patrons. As we know, masks do prevent infection rates and provide personal safety. And so please wear a mask when you're in public places, because as we know, really, it's not too much to mask. So a few other Elizabeth Emanuel from the Downtown Improvement Authority and Christina Tuggerson with the Capital City Chamber of Commerce, and certainly the City of Tallahassee. They are bringing this idea to life. It's being painted. Weather cooperating. I know they've started it a couple days ago. Hopefully we'll finish it up. If not today, tomorrow again, it depends on the weather, but right in the middle of the intersection. The location is very intentional. They're at Gaines and Railroad. You figure that's kind of the intersection of, you've got College Town, you've got Southside, you've got Downtown, you've got Frenchtown. So it's all kind of there. So again, very, very intentional. And this gives us as a community a very tangible, creative way to connect us with the rest of the country, with what's going on in America and certainly what's going on here in our own community. So go check it out. Again, as we know, these peaceful protests and these art demonstrations, they are about equity, justice, and equality. Black lives matter. So it's up to all of us to stand against racism, discrimination, and injustice wherever it exists. And in this moment and in time, you can make a difference. So please keep that in mind. And as we know, in this evolving COVID pandemic, we are all learning. Something new, more things are happening. And these meetings are designed to provide this shared learning, to share knowledge and to share support for each other and for our community. Because as we know, we are stronger together, and together we will get through this. So as we do every week, we have several outstanding speakers that are with us this morning. So then we're going to hear from them, and then we're going to open it up to hear from you. So first on deck this morning will be Dr. Mandy Stringer. She is the CEO of the fabulous Tallahassee Symphony Orchestra. She's also a member of the Leon County Tourist Development Council. And wow, super excited. We have Maestro Darko Buterac, who is joining us from Serbia. They are here this morning, and they are going to share updates on TSO's adventurous new digital season that they are rolling out. So next, then, we will hear from KCCI. We've got Betsy Couch. She is the Executive Director of the Knights Creative Communities Institute, a along with several of the 2020 catalysts, Patrick O'Brien, Tarsha Davis, and Susanna Rossell, to share some updates on some very cool two new biking, cycling projects in our community. And then last, but certainly not least, we're going to hear from Amanda Morrison. She is the managing partner of Social Catering and Events. That's the gathering, banquet at Capital City Country Club, and Happy Motoring. And the new Social Kitchen. It is a new restaurant concept at Premier Health and Fitness. So Amanda's with us this morning to share how they've adapted their business model and launched a brand new concept in the middle of a global pandemic. So we're going to start off with Mandy and Darko, and then we're going to turn it over to Betsy and the 2020 Catalyst, and then to Amanda. So Mandy and Darko, take it away.
Okay, I'm going to start. Hey, everybody. Good to see you all. I'm going to start by telling Darko how jealous I am at the weather he's got there. Look at that.
It's not too bad.
It's been raining here for days on end, and it's gloomy. It's horrible.
It is.
That's okay. We can talk again in 6 months, and then I will definitely want to switch places.
So Darko and I are super excited to be here and share with everybody what we've got cooking here at the TSO. But I thought we should start with a little music, since that's what we do, which is directly tied to our season. You're going to hear now two things. One is a little, this ties into what's going on with COVID. There's no place like home, Wizard of Oz. And this fellow you're going to hear play some music is one of our guest artists next year. So we'll start here. Can everybody see that?
We can.
Okay.
Hertz weaves in countless melodies from the original soundtrack, including the melancholy Over the Rainbow. The hopeful, We're Off to See the Wizard. And of course, the triumphant Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead. William Hertz originally wrote this arrangement as a piano duet, and when I asked him to rewrite it for piano solo, he happily did so, but without doing me the courtesy of leaving any of the notes out. So honestly, it's a handful, but it's a brilliant take on fabulous music. William Hertz's Wizard of Oz fantasy is a modern classic.
So, Jackie Parker is actually going to be here with us next season, and he's going to be playing that piece. That was one of our requests. So I'm super excited to see those pyrotechnics in person. And luckily, I'll be one of the people that does get to see them in person. We have been working. I'm really, really proud of our board. We got on the train early, and we decided in April that there was no way we were going to be able to have an in-person season next year, but that we wanted to keep our season going. So we rapidly started exploring the technology and all the things we needed to do to make sure that the symphony had a presence in the community next season. And we've moved everything online. And we're also excited about this because now we can bring in more tourists, right? We can bring in people from outside of Tallahassee that can subscribe to our season and see what we're doing. So, we are really excited to have a virtual season. We're going to have 6 concerts. I'm going to let Darko talk to you about how we cooked this up and who we've got coming. But it's super exciting. We've got a platform up and running. We're using a platform called Uscreen, where people will buy a subscription to the season, and they will come online at time certain and watch concerts. And we've got an exciting lineup of guest artists. And we'll be using the guest artists to perform with as many TSO musicians as we can safely. So we've had two trial runs so far. We had a Memorial Day concert. And if some of you caught our 4th of July concert we did this past weekend, we're learning very quickly as we go. And we think we've got a pretty good handle on the technology. So we're very excited. And I am now going to hand it over to Darko to talk about our season and also pull up a PowerPoint too. Darko, take it away.
Hi, everybody. It's really an honor to speak to you this morning / this afternoon. I am Darko Boteret. I'm the music director of the Tallahassee Symphony, the conductor. And I'm incredibly excited about the way the Tallahassee Symphony has approached this crisis. They say every crisis has a silver lining. You know, one of the big talks, and this is something that we're, that in as part of the TSO organization, we've always explored, how do we bring new people to the orchestra? How do we broaden our reach? And pretty much, you know, a traditional symphony concert delivery has not changed in over a century, 150 years. It's come to the hall, sit down in the seat and listen to the orchestra play, let's say, a short 10-minute introduction. A soloist comes out, plays one piece. There's an intermission, and then you hear a big symphony. That is more or less the model that's been followed for nearly two centuries.
And, hey, come back.
Sorry? Everything okay?
Yep.
Can you hear me?
Please be sure to mute your line if you're not speaking.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
You're good, Doctor.
Okay. I just want to make sure. I am a little bit, let's say, rural, so I want to make sure the connection. I should actually face this way. That's a little more authentic, I guess. the concert model has not changed for two centuries. And we know that when people come to the orchestra and they get hooked, they become fans for life. That's kind of a statistic that is found across the world. So, early April, I think it was the first or second week of April, we brainstormed and Mandy came up with this idea. And as soon as she said it, I was like, yes, we have to do this. So what are we actually doing? Instead of having a traditional concert season where we present concerts in this old format, we're now able to change everything about it. We don't have to be in the concert hall. We don't have to follow an overture soloist symphony model. Pieces can be as long or as short as we like. We can actually introduce guest artists and see personality instead of just presenting music from the front of the stage. And I'm very excited about this this project. So one of the nice things about being early to the party is that we got our pick of guest artists. And I can tell you without any reservation, this is by far the most glamorous season as far as guest artists go in the history of the Tallahassee Symphony. And it is not like we don't bring guest artists. We've done galas. We've brought Renee Fleming to town a few years ago. But this is as if we have, let's say, five Renee Flemings in one year. The people are just incredible, and I'll tell you about them in a moment. So because of the new model, what we want to do is really partner with a guest artist as a curator of the concert. So we're really, you don't just get to see one piece with the guest artist in the concert. You will see them perform different types of music across the eras, but also really bending the genre and not just staying in, let's say, the classical mold. These are great musicians. These people are the greatest virtuosos on their instruments on the planet. And they're not just interested in the classical repertoire. So our program for the upcoming year will feature both, I'm just off the top of my head, we'll have spirituals, we'll have kind of a folk bluegrass band, there will be, as you saw with Wizard of Oz, a little bit of foray into cinema, but then also we're bringing a guest artist who works a lot with new music and kind of, as he calls it, he's at home as much with Bach as he is with Radiohead. So really quite a big variety. So The season will start off. I'll just go quickly through the artists so you have an opportunity to kind of get a view. We'll start off with Larry Brownlee. Lawrence Brownlee is one of the premier tenors worldwide. I had the great fortune to go to school with him at Indiana University in the early 2000s. A couple of weeks ago, the Mets broadcast the performance. He was the star along with Rene Fleming. He was the person of honor at the Bastille Day National French celebrations. He was the star for a nationwide celebration in France. He's graced halls in Vienna, in Milan, in New York. Really an incredible artist. I cannot believe we actually got him. And now this is a funny little local element. He's based in Niceville, Florida.
Wow.
Yeah.
Crazy.
His wife's family is from there. So they moved there a few years back, and he's okay with flying from Fort Walton worldwide. So he will open our season, and it will be a combination of what he does, what he's most famous for, which is opera arias, but then also spirituals and, let's say, popular music from mid-20th century, popular American music from mid-20th century. So that's our opener. Our second concert will be with Joshua Roman. Josh Roman was one of the youngest cellists ever appointed principal to a major orchestra in the U.S. He became principal of the Seattle Symphony at 22. I don't think he's 30 yet. Is he, Mandy? I'm not quite sure, but like, he's a kid. He composes.
He's a kid, and he's.
He's amazing. A kid. He's prodigy.
I'll throw this in real quick. I've been wanting to hire him for years. And when I go to my conference and approach his manager, they're like, yeah, he's, you know, he's $25,000. So we got him
which
for
is about our entire annual budget. Yeah.
So, you know, what I'll throw in is that is amazing about this whole lineup is we just got $150,000 worth of guest artists for under 50. So we're pretty stoked about it.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's tremendous.
Well, they all
the
need
work. The economy works in our favor. Yeah, exactly. So Josh Roman is the one who kind of says Bach to Radiohead, the premier young cellist worldwide today, has played all across the country and the world, and somebody who I'm really looking forward to because in addition to working in the classical music field, he's very involved beyond and is in fact a senior TED fellow, has several talks on YouTube that have garnered over 2 million views. And even volunteers with his music in Africa. He goes with his siblings and they play in Africa, in Uganda, and does charity work there. So really a very interesting person, and I'm thrilled to be able to welcome him to our community. Third in the roster is Blake Pouliot. Is that right? Third in the roster is Mickey Sodergren in December. Yes, sorry. This is our Pops concert. So as you know, we have a tradition in Tallahassee, a holiday magic show where we celebrate the spirit of the holidays in the hall. This time, we welcome Mickey Sodergren. Mickey has graced our stages for the last 3 seasons. She is kind of our go-to popular music artist. She is definitely, of all the singers I've met in my career, the most versatile. She's able to switch from classical music to pop, to blues, to jazz, just in, like a Swiss Army knife of a performer. And she did a Broadway pop show for us last season that was hugely successful. That team is coming back for the holidays, and it's going to be very, very special. In January, we welcome Blake Pouliot. Blake is one of the youngest violinists on the circuit. I had a chance to work with him in Asheville as part of the Asheville Symphony lineup. He's Canadian. He won the Montreal competition, which is one of the premier competitions internationally, not just in Canada, but internationally. That launched his career at the age of 19. Case in point, we worked on a piece in Asheville in September, and he presented with the Atlanta Symphony the same work a few months later. This is a top-level talent, and I'm super excited where he's going to go. Interesting for Blake, by the way, is he's probably one of the highest-viewed classical musicians on TikTok. So really broadening our reach, as it were. The next performance in February is Time for Three. Time for Three came to Tallahassee before This is a group that formed at the Curtis Institute in Philadelphia, one of the premier conservatories worldwide, over, I'd say, 10, 15 years ago. And they invented genre bending in music, in classical music field. So this is where the folk bluegrass element comes in. They are virtuosos on their instruments. It's a trio. The last time they came, it was such a pleasure to work with them. They performed all kinds of music. They performed about 8 different pieces in our classical concert. So now having the entire concert devoted to them, I think will be incredibly creative and exciting. And
Marco, can I jump in here real quick?
Please do. I'm like a runaway train right now. Sorry.
No, great. So their story is that they were all students at this premier conservatory, and they were all playing in the orchestra there. And the power went out at a classical music concert, in the orchestra concert. And they had all been getting together in the practice room, just playing bluegrass and whatever, just for fun, up until this time. And so in order to keep the audience entertained until they got the power up and running, they all went to the front of the stage and started playing together. And that was kind of how they launched themselves as Time for Three. So, and they're tons of fun. So super excited to have them back.
Yeah, really. And I have to say, you know, they arrange their own music and their stuff is absolutely top notch. Usually when you have arrangers do things for performers, they don't take full advantage of the virtuosity of the performer. These guys, you know, for 20 years, they're fiddling away in practice rooms, trying to be flashy and seeing how to put it in a musical context.
For the first time in our many Americans asking, does history still have a place for America?
Can we mute
there
that?
Are some who answered no.
Remind everybody to please mute your line.
Together tonight.
Everybody, please mute your line.
America is still united, strong, still compassionate, still willing to stand by those who are persecuted or alone.
Are
for those
being,
who are victims of police states.
Zoom bomb. There we go. Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
No worries. Where was that? I think I was on. Yeah, just Time for Three. I'm very excited about them and what they bring to the stage. I think it'll be a fabulous concert. And then finally, to end our season finale is with the person we started with, the great pianist John Kimura Parker. This is a person who hasn't just graced the great halls of North America, but worldwide. He's played in Berlin, in Tokyo, Los Angeles, South Africa, and every continent, and the most illustrious pianist we've ever had a chance to work with in Tallahassee. And as you heard on the Zoom call at the beginning, really incredible chops and incredible musicality. So as I said, a star-studded lineup like we've never had before in the history of the Tallahassee Symphony. But more importantly than that, for me, I come back, it's an opportunity for us to finally break the mold, show our personality, show who we are as musicians, not just through music, but actually to connect to our audiences through the new medium. And I think one of the things I know myself, I miss music greatly, and I miss connection to musicians greatly. But I think it's also something that the more we delve into this crisis, the more we're in the epidemic, the more we need the arts to take a break from it, to have perspective, to bring music as a healing element, not just in terms of joy, but in terms of reflection, healing, and bring that to our community. So we haven't chosen, and many orchestras worldwide have chosen to say, we're shutting our doors, we're protecting our cash flow until July 21. And we forged ahead because we believe in what we do, we believe in the quality of what we do, we're able to bring the best in the world to our town, to our community. And do it in a way that actually provides from a framework to experiment how we can go beyond the core audience, how we can connect beyond Ruby Diamond Concert Hall and with our community on a deeper level. And I'm super excited about this and just can't wait until the season starts.
Yeah, we're having all sorts of fun. We're going to do things, as Darko said, beyond just music, though. We're going to do interviews with these guys. We're going to do cooking demonstrations. We're coming up with all sorts of stuff. So it's going to be totally fun. And we're going to be able to showcase our wonderful musicians that are playing with them, and really just, you know, give people something to look forward to over the next 12 months when we can't gather together. I was able to be on the call a few weeks ago when Joseph St. Germain was on, and he was talking about what people are going to be, how they're going to be spending their tourism time. And they want to be outdoors because they feel safe there. We know from the data they're not going to feel safe inside. So we just took the bull by the horns, and we've decided to go this route. We're super excited about it. The other thing I wanted to do was take a moment to brag on us a little bit. The symphony has gotten two amazing grants from the National Endowment for the Arts in the last couple of weeks. We found out that we have gotten $20,000 to commission a new piece from Joel Thompson, who wrote The Seven Last Words of the Unarmed, if you all were at that concert.
Oh,
and that piece is going to be about the Tallahassee bus boycotts. So he's going to be writing that over the next year. And when we're able to gather together, it'll be a piece for the FAMU Concert Choir and some soloists in the symphony. And then the exciting news that we haven't been able to announce publicly yet, because we're not allowed to, but I'm going to tell you all, is that last week we received a $50,000 grant from the National Endowment for the Arts to put some online education programs on for the school children while they're at home. So we're super excited about that too. That's just great for us, and will allow us to keep our education mission going while we're going through this pandemic as well. So all good news, and we had one more little thing to play for you, unless anybody has any questions. Nope. Okay. So I thought we would end with a little bit of music. This is short, and this will give you a little taste of Time for Three, and they have been doing these things kind of regularly from their homes. This one they recorded on July 3rd, and it's called Virtual Optimism.
Uh-oh, Mandy. It went away. There you go. Mandy, Darko, thank you so much for being with us this morning. Darko, especially from Serbia, it's quite the commercial for Serbia because it's...
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And thank you all. You all are such an incredible asset and blessing for this community. The quality and caliber and just all of your performances every season, it keeps getting better. You keep outdoing yourself. So thank you for all that you do. And thank you for spending time with us this morning. It looks like another terrific season. So can't wait to see it. So thank you again for being with us. That's terrific.
Thank you so much. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Okay, next up we have Betsy Couch, the Executive Director of KCCI, and several of the terrific 2020 Patrick O'Brien, he's an attorney with Holland & Knight. Tarsha Davis, she's owner of Oracle Interior Design Firm, and Susanna Grussell of Lewis & Whitlock Architects. So take it away, Betsy and team.
Hi, everybody. I'm Betsy Couch, as Carrie mentioned, Executive Director for KCCI. And I also previously worked as Communications Director at Visit Florida, where Carrie and I first met each other, and I met so many of our tourism partners. So it's so good to be back in, you know, the tourism realm. What you'll hear today, we have some exciting things. I do feel like, as Mandy even showed, COVID has definitely brought out the creativity in people, which we love seeing. And I just love seeing everything that's happening all around Tallahassee. But what we are going to share with you today is a couple things that are coming up that we really thought the tourism industry would be interested in. So first off, Patrick, Tarsha, and Suze, they are three of our 13 volunteer community catalysts that kind of set out at the beginning of the year to say, what can we do creatively to enhance safety and to help better promote Leon County as this cycling destination? Because you, I don't know if all of you know, but we have so many world-class trails and hiking trails. So that was kind of the team's main goal. And then separately from that, one thing KCCI has always wanted to do, and we were so excited we were able to announce this last week, and we can go to the next slide. Gary, are you doing the slides?
Deontay is.
Oh, I can't see the slide. So hopefully everybody can see a slide. Oh, next slide. There it is. So while he's pulling up the next slide, it is about Art of the Box. So we were really excited that the other week we were able to launch with the City of Tallahassee and with support from COCA, this pilot project where, I don't know if y'all have seen these in other communities, but I've been wanting to do this forever, where you take graffitied traffic control boxes. So those big ugly boxes like what you see on the left-hand side of your screen, and you wrap them in a nice vinyl wrap of local artwork. So where I wanted to make sure you guys were aware of this is because right now we are in the process of accepting artwork. So think through all your tourism entities. You know, there's definitely guidelines, so it can't be an advertisement for an organization. But for example, it could be a beautiful picture of a symphony concert or, you know, a ballerina doing a dance. So you all can use your imagination, but I would encourage you all to check out the Art of the Box program. And it really takes only about a minute. It's free to submit a picture. And that way, then it would be something for consideration to be used to wrap these boxes. So that is our Art of the Box program. We're planning to have all the boxes get wrapped in September during KCCI's Placemaking Week. And we're really excited about it. So that's one thing we have going on. And then I am going to turn it over to Patrick and Suze and Tarsha to talk about the whole other exciting stuff we have going on, which relates to cycling in Leon County. But before we transition, any questions about Art of the Box?
Okay, great. Betsy, can you tell us, is there information on the website about what quality photo you would need submitted, that kind of thing?
Yes, and great question. I will, it's on kccitallahassee.com. If you go into our What We Do section, it's called Art of the Box, and all the rules and kind of just background are in there. What I will also do is share the direct link in the chat as soon as I finish talking. So I'll share that with everyone so you can all cut and paste if you want to.
That's great. Betsy, question I have is, how many are you envisioning? Or does it really depend on how many artists are interested and how many traffic control boxes there are?
The city has originally agreed to do 5, and we selected 5 all throughout the community that typically have had graffiti in the past and are at some major intersections. Now, we'll see. It depends on the kind of quality artwork we get. You know, the city may be open to doing more. And also, due to the popularity, this ultimately may become KCCI's project for 2021. So we're going to kind of gauge how this pilot project goes, and then that will really drive how many we're doing.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Well, now next slide, and I will turn it over to Patrick to start talking about our cycling efforts.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you all for having us today. So our group came together in January trying to figure out a way we could address bicycle safety in our community. We did a lot of research. All in all, so far, we've actually had feedback from about 2,000 people in our community. And really what kind of came to fruition is this idea of creating a bike park. And so actually, you can see here the big two giant stars. We're going to create two bike parks, so we're proposing two bike parks. One, which is a pretty exciting destination mountain biking skills park, would be located in the Market District. But we're also working with Sable Palm Elementary to create a road safety park located on campus for the students of Sable Palm Elementary. And we'll talk about both today. Additionally, you can kind of see all these little stars. For the months of May and June, we had this traveling bike rack initiative. WCPV did a story on it. You can see it in the bottom right-hand corner, where we moved the bike rack to a different park every single week. We dropped hints on social media. The first person to guess it correctly got a gift card to Higher Ground, which is a bicycle shop in the Market District area. Just raised a lot of awareness. It was a really fun little project that we're pretty excited about. But if we go to the next slide, I'll go ahead and turn it over to Tarsha, who can speak on the Sable Palm project.
Thanks, Patrick. As you all can see here, this is the proposed Sable Palm Elementary project. And this project will help improve the talent pipeline in the city. It'll also make the children more aware of cycling safety tips, and that cycling is an important transportation and fun recreation option all at the same time. So our KZCI team has worked with the Leon County Schools to create an educational bike park that you see on the screen with Sable Palm. And Sable Palm serves on average 550 students and serves the 32304 zip code. We'll actually begin creating the educational space this month, mid-July, upcoming here. And the plan is to have all the spaces complete by the fall of 2020. So we're very super excited about this project. And if there, do we have any questions on that? If not, I'll turn it back over to Patrick. All right, great. Patrick?
Perfect. We can go to the next slide. So these are the proposed benefits of our Market District location. So we'll kind of we'll dive a little deep into it. We'll show you some proposed designs in a second. But really, one, we see the economic vitality. Market District is a hub of local business. From Momo's to Gordo's to Nick's Toggery, Hearth and Soul, but it's kind of missing that part kind of gathering space. And so we've been working with the Market District businesses who are really excited about this proposed park location, how it can draw in families, people who, you know, don't just kind of go to the park, but they go get ice cream with their kids afterwards, they get a bite to eat at Hopkins Eatery, but really just kind of draw people into the area. Which ties into accessibility. As you know, the Market District is located right off I-10 and Thomasville Road. There's also a bus stop right on site. So what we're excited about is this could be a park not just for the people on the north side, but for people all over Tallahassee and then from outside our region. We've talked to communities like Smyrna, Georgia and Broomsville, Colorado, which have put in these parks before. And they've said they've been surprised by the number of people who come from far outside the region just to enjoy these types of parks because they're just really unique fun experiences. Connectivity is a big thing for us. This park would be located along trails that are already used every single day. And so what we kind of see is this park's a stepping stone, right? You come, you learn mountain biking skills, and then you get out and start enjoying our over 700 miles of trails. So it's just, you know, another feather in the cap of our growing trails community. Additionally, it's a community space. Again, that area used to have the farmer's market underneath the pavilion. It's now going to be an REI and a movie theater. So things are changing, and so they kind of just lack that community space. So you could have a farmer's market here. We've talked to elementary schools who like the idea of having field trips at this park location, but we're pretty excited about that. And then finally, additionally, safety and wellness. Our whole project started with the impetus of improving bicycle safety. Florida's ranked last in a bunch of measures for bicycle safety. Leon County was identified by the Department of Transportation as a top 25 county most in need of additional bicycle safety measures. So incorporating educational signage throughout the park will be key for us to make sure that, you know, we are addressing the bicycle safety issue. And so if we can go to the next slide real quick. So just real quick on the connectivity piece. So you can kind of see right where that bubble that says committed project Market District connectivity on bottom. That's right by the site location. Again, we're going to dive into a design in a second to give you a better idea. But these are committed blueprint trails. Blueprint's already committed the funding part of Blueprint 2020. To grow out these trails. So we're pretty excited because, right, you could come to the park, drop on that southern trail, get all the way to that western trail, which is the power line trail that is already used every single day, and then get on to all the rest of our trails, like Red Bug and the like. So we're pretty excited about that kind of potential to be, you know, a small asset in a larger growing trails community. But, you know, I'm sure you guys kind of want to see what we're talking about. So I'll turn it over to Suze, who can really dive into the details on the next slide.
All right. Thank you, Patrick. So just for reference, for all the different screens, I know we all live in different parts of Tallahassee. I want to acquaint you. Premier is at your top right. We have an existing residential community towards the north part of this slide and an existing commercial market district towards the southern part. We are choosing to locate our skills park towards the western end of this currently vacant, underutilized lot in between existing tree lines. And we want to do that to retain that natural shade and beauty already in here with the site, taking into account existing conditions, because not only one of our design values is to put forth a park, an actual green space, a bike park that has wonderful landscaping and shade and a nice park-like setting for everyone to come to, but this was reiterated and supported overwhelmingly through our survey that reached over 2,000 people, in addition to our one-on-one conversations that we've been having for the past 5 to 6 months with different stakeholders around this community and Tallahassee and even internationally with different consultants who know bike parks really well. So we're really excited about this. We've sized it according to the neighborhood that we're really targeting families here, as Patrick mentioned. So it's going to be large enough to offer a number of different amenities to a number of people from different age groups. Unlike Sable Palm, which is very targeted towards younger audience, a younger biking community, this is going to be for everyone. And we're really excited about that, to put something like that with KCCI in our mission, that we want as many people to come to this public space as possible that we are proposing as a concept. Additionally, let's take a closer look. So we can get into the skills course. Can we go to the next slide? Thank you. All right, so here's a closer look. We're gonna stay at, you know, a higher level concept for today's talk, but we're proposing what is called a multi-level skill course, illustrated in that brown track you see to the inside of this quarter mile loop track, which is one of the amenities I mentioned in the previous slide. And as to your right side of this slide, you should see the obstacles that would be situated in these different levels that are varied according to different difficulties as the rider's own confidence. They would bike through from the most novice to more advanced, could come here and bike through these different levels and get experience and capability and agility and balance. Ultimately, just go outside in a fun, healthy, outdoor community space within their backyard. And what's not shown at this scale is the educational component, which would really be key, where we would co-locate signage throughout the park with the different obstacles to inform riders on trying tips and tricks on not only biking in general, trying these obstacles, but tips and tricks to take with them for rules of the road outside of this park setting, not only to other trailheads, but also urban settings. And so it would just be a great biking resource community. In addition, we want to think about how could this be a community space now that the market square farmers market has moved. Could this appeal to more than just the cycling community? And so we're proposing this quarter mile loop track that not only would be a great amenity for cyclists with disabilities, but we're proposing it as a hard surface track. We're really excited about that, where it would be amenable and accessible to cyclists with disabilities, or typically on hand bikes, floor to the ground, would have to be on Thomasville Road with a lot of traffic. They could come bike here safely off the road. But also, it's wide enough to be a multi-use path. So what you have is a number of schools, number of different neighborhoods in this area could come and jog here, could come with their families and their strollers or skateboards, and or food trucks could come on the weekend and set up shop and have a nice like weekend farmers market here. We've gotten a lot of excitement in talking with community about this specific design feature, but also family design, family-oriented design features as well within this park. And again, I'm being really succinct here today. I'm just hitting on a few key design considerations that we have in mind for this park. There's a whole longer spiel that we can always take questions after that. For now, I'm gonna pass the mic back over to Tarsha, who's gonna talk about our community input and outreach.
Thank you, Suze. A number of cyclists and business leaders have actually given input and suggestions that led to these proposals that you've seen today for both projects. Through our talks with the nationally recognized progressive bike ramps, as Sue's mentioned, they felt that a space of this caliber could be created within about 4 months and roughly the cost of between $150,000 to $250,000. So we've talked with a variety of other communities, as mentioned before, Smyrna, Georgia, and uniformly these communities that build destination bike parks such as this have all stated the benefits that far exceed the investment while elevating their areas as a cycling destination. So we hope that you all would agree that this serves as a tourism draw and an additional amenity that could elevate Leon County's mountain biking status as a major destination. So we really appreciate your time and intention, and thank you for the opportunity to present today. And we'd like to just open it up for questions if you have any right now.
Anybody have any questions?
I saw these plans back, years ago with the Market District Merchants Association meeting. This wasn't on it, but this is wonderful. But the other section immediately closer to Thomasville Road was going to have other things on it. Is that part of the project you're involved with, or has that been put on hold, or is that just outside of your purview?
Yeah, no.
I would say that's outside our purview. There's a lot of plans for the Market District. Blueprint 2020 has made Market District a priority, and that's the whole entirety of the Market District. I think they had $9.4 million set aside for the Market District. That may change based off Blueprint funding issues with all of COVID. That being said, no, our project is just proposing dealing with the small lot that you kind of saw and just about a park in that area. So we're not looking at the entirety of the Market District. So I couldn't answer your question as to what's going on with the rest of it. But I do know that Blueprint does have money and has made the area a priority, so it's very possible.
Correct. And we're only looking at about 25% of this central lot that we're proposing with our design. So it's less than the 75 that would be, hopefully other people could come and do wonderful other park amenities.
Thank you, everybody.
One question we want to pitch to the group, if we have a moment, Carrie, is we were curious if people had suggestions for possible tourism locations for the traveling bike rack. It's garnered a lot of attention. We were very happy and surprised to hear, like, just how commissioners and different people from all over Tallahassee have taken photos and approached us after it. And we were wondering, could this, you know, potentially travel around to different tourism destinations to promote cycling to wonderful community Tallahassee spots beyond just these existing trailheads. So if anyone has any thoughts or ideas, we're happy to hear them.
I would say, and I appreciate that very much, and I wasn't sure who else was in there. I just want to be mindful for the sake of time. If you know, we don't have a lot of time, we try to wrap up these calls, you know, pretty much within an hour. Sometimes we go over, so I don't want to, you know, shortchange that opportunity to ask for feedback on the traveling bike rack. I don't know that much about it. I think this would be something that we certainly would like to share with the group. Maybe we can have you guys back for another quick, just give us an overview of it, kind of where it's been, where it's going, how does it move forward, kind of be able to spend a little more time on it than I'm not sure we have enough time on it today. So if you all are okay with that, unless there's any pressing questions right now that we've got for Patrick, Susanna, or Tarsha. I'm going to go ahead because we do have another guest speaker, but are there any brief questions? We will definitely circle back around on the traveling bike rack. I love that idea, and I bet there's a number of people on the call that will also be really interested to hear about it. So are there any other questions right now? Okay, well, Betsy, Patrick, Susanna, Tarsha, thank you I'm so excited. Biking theme park. I'm so excited that you all as overachievers have not only produced one stellar project, but two. So again, I thank you all very, very much. Look forward to continuing the dialogue and definitely will circle back around. I'll coordinate with Betsy and then speak
can have you on maybe next week to talk about the traveling bike rack.
Perfect. So, thank you very much.
Thank you, Carrie. Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Carrie. This was great. Good to see everyone.
Thank you, everybody. Really appreciate it. So now, certainly last but not least, another exciting guest speaker. We have Amanda Morrison, who is with us today, the managing partner of Social Catering and Events. She's been a leader in the industry for the last couple of years and really come up doing super creative things. And certainly with the gathering, this incredible space. Town, the banquets and the functions that really elevated Capital City Country Club and Happy Motoring, of course. So now there's even a new concept, but certainly like everybody else's, they've had to adapt with this COVID-19 world. So Amanda, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you so much, everyone. Can you hear me and can you see me? Are we good?
Yep, we can hear you and see you.
So what a wild time to be a business owner. The last couple months, it's been like a skills challenge. I feel like I'm secretly getting filmed for like a new Food Network show that is terrible. I give it like 0 out of 5 stars if I could. But we just have to do a ton of pivoting, and it's still every day that this thing is lasting a lot longer than we thought. My principal entity is Social Catering and Events. So we were catering and large gatherings for the first to fall and will likely be the last to come back online. So we kind of knew early on that we had to really get creative and pivot for a long haul, for like 6 or 7 months in reality at best. So we kind of knew at the front end, we had good insight that it was going to be a lot. And then our other outlet is Happy Motoring, which is still a relatively new business. We opened about 2 years ago, and it had just started to get its traction. You know, Proof had opened about a year ago in the neighborhood. So we were just kind of hitting that sweet spot. But it's a bar only by license. So we have been open 2 days since March 15th. So it's been wild, but I think what wasn't different from us and the way that our companies operate as a whole, if you're familiar with the rest of our portfolios for the Table Hospitality with Madison Social, Centrale Township, we have just always, a part of our strategy has always been strong connection with our customers, and not just building, but nurturing a very large social media and personal networking audience. And that's what has saved us 100% is that I kind of always give the analogy that it's like a savings account, right? It's there when you need it, but you also can't neglect it. You have to keep feeding into it, keep compounding, because it's not just building it. And like, you know, you can get 10,000 followers on social media, and that's great, but if you're not constantly engaging them, they're going to kind of fall away. And then when you need them the most, you can't rebuild that, especially in the middle of a global crisis. So we were very blessed and fortunate to have already put that groundwork in, and so thankful that we did. I think in our industry, especially as restaurateurs and in hospitality, lodging, everyone gets this. There's so much that goes on in your four walls that demand your attention every day that it's really hard to take the time to step outside and go, pivot from being operational and in your building. But it's so valuable, and it's what has saved us throughout this entire crisis is that we had a very broad online audience already there. We also had online infrastructure already in place, so we didn't have to scramble to get e-commerce set up. We didn't have to scramble to get large Facebook and Instagram audiences that would watch anything that we would put out virtually. So that pivot to virtual was essential. And so online sales really stepped in and saved the day to take the types of programming that we would do in person and figure out creative ways to flip it. So we did a whole virtual wine tasting series where people kind of picked up on one set day their bottles of wine, their cheese board, and then we had a private Zoom class where we all just drank our wine together and had a great time. We've done a ton of virtual content through the restaurants at Madison Social. And, part of it is certainly to try to help the dramatic losses in revenue. It doesn't even scrape the surface of where we are in numbers. But again, knowing all along that we're thinking long-term, we know it's staying top of mind, and that if we can just be one of the ones that survives on the other end of this, you've stayed with your audience too. So you kind of, it's trust is a two-way currency. So we know that, you know, with everything going on, the people that you're loyal to and you give them this great memory or this great experience and times like we're in now, you're just staying top of mind and you're honoring that partnership with them as a customer and as a provider of experiences, and they're going to be there for you when life hopefully returns to normal. So now more than ever, we're just so thankful that we've always made a cornerstone of our brand and our business mentality, the marketing, specifically digital online marketing, but also the value of in-person relationships, being active members of our community, serving on boards. I'm a proud former board member of the Symphony, so I got to work with Starco and Mandy, and my business partner, Matt Thompson, is very involved in the community, and those are the things that save us. You know, those are the people that say, hey, we're in this with you, and, you know, they're ordering family meals, and they're coming and buying gift cards to just buy gift cards to support you. So I've kind of said all along, if I give one piece of business advice to other people, specifically in the restaurant industry, is we are just notorious for not getting outside of our four walls and engaging. And it's just so important in today's day and age. And this is when it comes into play. This is when you kind of really see that strong value of marketing and networking and relationship building. And so on that note, we also opened a business in the middle of a global pandemic. So great. It was a really smart idea. We're really loving it right now. We had entered into an agreement with Premier Health and Fitness, owned by CNH, Charleston Memorial Hospital. They had this cafe space in the gym, and kind of kept trying to find businesses to fit in, and it was never quite the right thing that their members wanted or that they were wanting. And Stephanie Derzapolsky, who is, again, a great friend that I met through business networking, would always just come for advice every time it would be time to think of something new for the space. And finally, this last time, I was like, girl, just let me build you something. So instead of that, trying to back into everyone not quite checking the boxes of what they were looking for, we said, hey, we want to be a partner in this with you. And we want to open something that's everything that they want. Because as people in business, like, I want to sell the things people want to buy. That's just like day one of business school, right? It's like sell things people would like to buy. So we had already been set up with them. Our grand opening day was scheduled to be the day before gyms were mandated to close by executive order. So, you know, we hadn't even had a chance to get up and running. We were literally that close to getting started, which also means that we were not available to any PPP funds, any you know, grants or anything like that. So we were kind of just out to dry on that. But as soon as they reopened, it was very important for us to be there to greet those members and guests as they started coming back when the gym was allowed to reopen because of the larger relationship. So part of our move, and why, you know, we really were interested in this project with Samir is the bigger picture long-term relationship with TNH, who is, you know, just a major cornerstone of our business community. So just, again, it's the trust currency of just being good partners, doing what you'll say and saying what you'll do. And we know that even though it's a little slow right now, we're just thankful to have a place for some of our employees to go every day and get a paycheck, and we're building that trust. You know, you're going to be remembered as the person that was there for them through thick and thin, and we know we'll come out the other side, and that's you know, we're going to reap the benefits from that of just building strong, authentic relationships with our customers.
That's great, Amanda. I must say I saw and have certainly utilized some of your family meals, but now with the new concept of Premier, I saw beautiful pork tenderloin.
Yeah. I mean, the partnership. Yeah, so part of, you know, it's opened up all of the resources that we get to you know, have because of that partnership with Premier. So they've given us full access to their registered dietitian teams who help us develop a meal every week that is, you know, checks all of their dietary boxes as being a very healthy, nutritionally balanced meal. And we're able to now offer that not just to the premier audience, but our broader audience through social catering and the family meal program that we've been doing. So it's been tremendous. And again, you know, as catering, we had to just find ways. You know, we're used to catering. Our biggest capacity that we do is, you know, we've served up to 2,500 people at one event, and now we're doing meals for two, which is very outside the wheelhouse. And almost harder, I would say, to figure out. So we've had to do a lot of learning on our feet. But that's it. That's what happens. You know, when times get tough, you've got a jet that shows you what you're made of, and our team has been phenomenal. And again, it goes back to you're just making these investments along the way. You know, the savings accounts aren't there typically to buy a new outfit. It's there to, you know, when something unexpected comes along. And so I would say across the board, from just the relationship with our customers to the investments we've made with building an incredibly strong management team who are the stars of the show, who step up and have been there and have been with us in an industry that has constant turnover. Having that core team has just been invaluable, and it's what helped us, helping us get through.
Amanda, it's tremendous. And you go, everyone knows, truly, you all have cultivated such tremendous relationships with the community because of your social media presence and activity. So there is absolutely lessons to be learned there. And also, you all have always been so innovative. And adapt. It's a very community oriented, very, very innovative, nimble, truly doing this tremendous work. And again, we're so blessed that you guys are in the community, and we all need to do our part. Again, as we said, to our restaurants are really struggling. And these family meals are awesome. If you have not taken advantage, really encourage you.
They're great. And same thing, it came from one of the things that Matt says all the time that I love, because it's so true, is half the time we let our audience write our marketing plan for us. It's, I think sometimes with business owners and operators, we have this very firm idea of what we want to do. And sometimes you just have to stop and listen to what people are telling you that they want. So we heard early on, you know, the need to have meals that people can take home and not have to cook, you know, not Blue Apron style, but also not burgers and fries and things like that. So kind of fitting things that were kind of comfort classic healthy meals. And then we started them doing them in servings for four. And then we kind of heard our audience saying, hey, we would love to have these, but I, you know, it's just two of us or just one of us and we can't have that many leftovers. So, you know, we pivoted and started having meals for two. And then now our newest pivot is we're gonna be launching next week different pickup points in different communities that are further away. You know, we've been running pickup out of our sister property, Soto Baking Cove, very centralized and in Midtown. But we're hearing from our Buck Lake and our Southwood friends that aren't driving to an office every day that, you know, that's pretty far to go pick up dinner. So now we're going to be launching. We picked kind of four key communities around town, and each day of the week, they'll be able to order in advance, order, you know, multiple meals if they want to, and just come someplace a little closer to home to pick those up. So just learning every day, because we know we've got a really, really, really long time before our normal day-to-day, what our normal business model looks like, before we see that again. So just doing what we can.
I think the whole, you hear about new normals, but the fact is, it's just, we're never going back to the status quo. It's will forever change and different, and you all have, again, always been so innovative. And as we've learned and talked about on so many of these weekly calls and meetings, it does, those, the winners will be the ones that adapt and pivot and, you know, totally look at, we may have operated this way yesterday, but it's not today or the future, you know, to continually adapt and evolve. And Amanda, you've certainly highlighted a lot of great lessons, learning success stories. And again, everyone, we got to do our part, do what we can to help our businesses locally. Amanda, anybody have any questions for Amanda?
Thank you, guys.
Anybody have any questions for her? Anybody? Okay, well, great. Well, Amanda, thank you so much for being with us this morning. Really appreciate it. Again, try those family meals. They're awesome. So again, thank you so much for all of our excellent speakers today, TSO, KCCI, Amanda, for the
really for all of y'all, really appreciate you spending time with us. Next week, we're going to have Lindsay Magura. She is the Vice President of Development for North American Properties to give us an update on the Cascades project. We're just zooming along there. We're going to have David Yon. He is certainly a principal in Gulf Winds Track Club, main organizer of Tallahassee Marathon, Turkey Trot. Certainly, we work a lot with Gulf Winds Track Club. Is a tremendous partner with our sports team. David is also a very frequent Tallahassee Democrat guest columnist, and he is in his spare time an attorney. And he is going to be with us next week. And then we're going to highlight a couple of rock stars from our own Visit Tallahassee team, Janet Roach and Katie Gardaki, to demonstrate a new, brand new, it's like a microsite within our website, all focused on meetings and groups. And they have really hit it out of the park, working with Scott Lindemann on our team. And so I want to preview that to you to know you have this new digital asset for you to when it comes to meetings and groups here in the destination. So as we know, these are the most uncertain times. And remember, when COVID hit, we all fell together. And to be sure, we all will rise together. So there will be brighter days ahead. But for now, please continue to be safe. Please continue to wear a mask. Remember, it's not too much mask. And make sure your business is hurricane ready. It is hurricane season. So again, thank you all for being with us this morning. Really, again, thank you to all the speakers. Really appreciate it. And we'll see you next week.